Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. My guest today is Beth LaFave, who's one of my clients in my Reignite Your Life-Changing Sabbatical program. I'm so excited for you to hear Beth's story today because when she started working with me, she was at a real crossroads. She wasn't sure whether she should take her sabbatical in Uganda or have a sabbatical at home in the Twin Cities where she lives with her husband and two children. Beth has a great story about identifying the purpose in her sabbatical and creating alignment between her sabbatical and her longer-term career goals. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Beth. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So before we get started hearing about your sabbatical plan, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, your institution and department, and just a tiny bit about your research for context?
Sure. I'm an associate professor at Bethel University, which is a faith-based small liberal arts college in Minnesota and the Twin Cities area. I teach in their undergraduate education program, so our program is primarily focused on training the next generation of teachers. Within that, my particular role is focused on teaching a course called Educational Equity, and so it's been really fun to apply a lot of my kind of research background, my graduate studies, to thinking about what teachers need to know as they enter the field about equity from a number of different perspectives. So that's a lot of what I do. Being in a small liberal arts college, I've traditionally taught 7 classes a year. This year I'm at 6. And then the course is also a gen ed, so I have a lot of students from across the university. In terms of research, I started out in the comparative education field, comparative and international education, and I had done most of my doctoral work in Uganda. I wrote a 100-year history of British colonial intervention and schooling in the Ugandan protectorate. I remember really distinctly actually emailing my advisor, Fran Vavris, and asking if I could make it a shorter history, and she said no. But yes, it was quite long. It was like 300 pages. But then I also had the opportunity while I was there, while I was in graduate school, to work on a multi-year longitudinal study of youth livelihoods also in Uganda. So I was traveled for my research. I was also there working with a team of Ugandan researchers and graduate fellows from the University of Minnesota. And so that was kind of my primary background. And then I happened to start a study with a colleague, Matthew Thomas, while I was in graduate school, looking at Teach for American Teachers. And so when I got the job at Bethel, like maybe a lot of people in comparative ed, I wasn't really sure which direction I would end up going with all of that. But I ended up in a, pretty domestic US-based program with a pretty heavy teaching load. And so a lot of the research I've done has sort of focused on and built on that original TFA study, which, was never really what I intended in graduate school, but it ended up being a really amazing project to work on and gained a lot of experience. So going into my sabbatical, I felt, and we talked about this a little bit before, but just like I had a lot of different options and a lot of different sort of strings that I could tug on, and was trying to think really strategically about what is really a unique opportunity to kind of refocus and think about doing a project that would set me up really well for kind of that post-sabbatical, post-tenure research trajectory.
Yeah, thanks so much. And it's such helpful context to know about these different threads of your research and your connections to Uganda, but then also how that does and doesn't align with your work at Bethel, where you're more focused on students who are probably going to be teaching in the US and you're not teaching comparative ed classes. So we started working together over the summer. You joined my, we did know each other beforehand, but you started my Reignite program over the summer. And this was the challenge you came with, right? You were, you know, that you have this sabbatical coming up, or you were working on your sabbatical application and you weren't sure how to focus your time and energy for that time away. So could you talk a little bit about where you were at the point that we started working together, and maybe talk us through the decisions that you made and how you came to make those decisions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have to say, I'm not usually a signer upper. We still have not replaced our Netflix account. We were borrowing my husband's parents and got kicked off. And so all that to say, when you first sent the email, my initial thought was, I don't really know, but I felt so kind of lost and not sure, yeah, what threads to pull on or what made the most sense. And I did. I actually signed up. So this should be an endorsement to anybody who's on the fence.
I love it. I got a non-signer upper to sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't join gyms. I go for a run. You know, I'm not a signer upper. Anyway. So when I was proposing my sabbatical for the summer, this was one of my primary projects, was figuring out the application. It's not, you know, I don't know. I think it was 5 pages altogether, but I felt like I needed to actually know what I was applying for. And perhaps other listeners will be in a similar position, but sabbaticals are semi-competitive at my institution. You can't just apply and be guaranteed, but you have to have some sort of project. And so I wanted to be sure that when I was applying, I was going to get picked, right? We're all sort of, many of us in academia, these overachievers. So I was like, well, I have to do well at this. And I was really stuck, to be perfectly honest, which is why I did sign up. My thoughts were kind of surrounded. I had an initial connection to folks at a university in Uganda. I actually had the opportunity to travel there in May to kind of see if a trip would be feasible, or spending a sabbatical would be feasible. And I did not have great feelings as an outcome of that trip. It wasn't that it was bad. In many ways, it reinforced for me that I would love to work with that university faculty. I'm actually in the midst of designing a new course that would bring our students to that university every other January. So from like a purely partnership perspective, it was a fantastic trip. But I felt myself afterward feeling incredibly overwhelmed by sort of the logistical feat it would require to get my family to Uganda. And you know, unlike some folks, my husband does not have a portable job. He's a veterinarian. He cannot do that online. He spent some time looking into options, and just there's very little. We have young kids. Schooling is primarily boarding, or it would be, you know, in the majors where we would not be. So that presented a challenge. So just all of these things, it felt very much like I was trying to push the boulder up the hill. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, was working this summer on finishing up, finalizing a book proposal based on the Teach for America work. The timeline for that was hazy, but increasingly as August loomed, it became likely that I was going to be working on that in some capacity over the sabbatical. So that was kind of a factor. And then in addition, I have been tinkering with a new research idea that is US based and much more accessible. So kind of returning to my history of education, I really enjoy thinking about how our ideas about education shape the kinds of schools and policies that we build as a society. That was very much what I looked at for my research in Uganda. And so I've been tinkering around a project that would look at kind of the history of how evangelicals have engaged in educational policy, the kinds of policies they've advocated for, the kinds of positions they've advocated parents take in terms of where to send their kids to school, how involved or not involved they are. And I've just been dying to have a chunk of time to work on this. And so it felt like there were sort of 3 very distinct things in my comparative education training, surrounded, you know, with lots of colleagues who have done really amazing international work. I felt like, well, of course, if I have the chance to spend 6 months in this place that I really love, that's what I should be doing. And so I kept kind of pushing the boulder up the hill, mm-hmm, over and trying to figure it out. And I had some very serious conversations, you know, with my husband and with folks, with the partnership I was looking at. And it was doable. It felt really challenging. I actually wrote out almost all of my Fulbright application, had sent it to some colleagues, friends to take a look at a draft. When I finally, through our conversation, was kind of like, I don't think this is actually aligning with my goals, which I'm sure you'll ask me about in a second, mm-hmm. but it was really hard. And so it was super helpful to actually sit and reflect a little bit on what I was trying to accomplish, because it wasn't feasible to do all of the things. And, you know, as my mother likes to remind me, there's time for that. Sometimes there are some really great things, but it's just not the right time for things to work out, and that's okay. So it was hard to let go of that, but that was the turmoil that I was experiencing this summer as I got ready to apply.
Yeah. And I remember when we first talked, at least how I understood it, your plan was to kind of move both options along. And then eventually at some point you'd land on something, right? Maybe if you got the Fulbright, you'd go to Uganda. And if you didn't, you would do a US focused sabbatical. Is that kind of where you were?
That was my original thought. Yeah, I was in like full can kicking mode to just delay my decision as long as possible. And then I scheduled a meeting with one of the deans who is responsible for this kind of process and basically asked his advice. And he said, well, why don't you? So I should explain, it was not feasible for our family to spend a full year in Uganda for a number mm-hmm. of reasons. We thought we could maybe squeeze out 6 months worth. But we had always kind of planned for, if I had a US-based sabbatical, to stay in the US locally. And so I talked to my dean, and his recommendation was, well, why don't you propose the year-long stay here sabbatical project? And then if Fulbright comes back as a yes, you know, you can always ask for less sabbatical. No one's going to say no. I was sort of like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And so initially I was proposing the Fulbright project at the same time as I was writing a sabbatical application about a totally separate research project. I would not recommend this approach to anybody. Yes, that was, I think as of like mid-June, I was like, okay, I'm just going to do both or write both and then do one later.
Yeah. And then I remember, I mean, I think it was within 2 or 3 weeks of working together that you really got clarity around the not going to Uganda, which is hard. As someone who also does comparative ed research, I do think there, and just in general, I think the bias around sabbaticals is to have the really exciting kind of exotic sabbatical where you could come back and say, I spent 6 months in Uganda. But in working together, we really noticed that as you thought about where you wanted your career to go in the future, the Uganda option wasn't necessarily going to support that. Like, there was a lack of alignment. I think we talked a lot about alignment between kind of your values and your goals for your family and your professional goals. So could you say a little bit about that and why does the US option align better for you and kind of help move you in the direction you want to go?
Yeah, I think there were really two sort of things that were involved in that. The first was you had me do an exercise, I think in the second week of the sabbatical, planning your sabbatical work, where I had to identify what my goals were. And it was very easy to get stuck in this headspace of goal one, go to Uganda, goal two, work on this other project. And what you had me do is to not think about sort of ends, which those are, so much as goals in the sense of what do you want your sabbatical to sound like, feel like, you know, what's that? And I realized that I was looking for, this feels like a quiz to remember what I wrote down, but I was looking for something that would be restful. It can be really challenging to maintain the kind of publication pattern that I have. I usually publish, I think, 1.5 to 2, sometimes more, things per year, and teach 6 or 7 courses a year and all the things. And so one was thinking about what will be kind of rejuvenating and relaxing. The second piece was it would really be a disservice, but also I think a lost opportunity to not spend some really quality time with my family. The year that I am eligible for sabbatical, I'll have a kindergartner and a 5th grader. And so really getting to, not that I spend a lot of time with them, but to spend not the time at the end of the day when I'm tired, but other kinds of time, and to have some time for maybe extended travel or shorter weekend trips, things that just can be challenging to fit in when there are a lot of demands, especially in kind of a two-career household. So that was a really important piece for me. And then the third one, and this kind of relates to the second thing, I should have used letters here and then numbers, but was that I wanted something that felt like it put me on a more sustainable research trajectory. The challenge of coming into a more domestic focused teacher education program as a comparative scholar with international research background is it's just not, I don't have the same kind of funding, bandwidth, graduate student support. It's just logistically challenging to maintain that kind of research. Whereas some of the more US-based projects that I've done, especially the newer kind of historical look at evangelicals and public schooling, felt like a more sustainable research trajectory. And so when I realized that my goals were really feel rested and rejuvenated and to build a more sustainable research trajectory for the position that I'm in and to spend some really quality time with my family, those three things really would not be met well by a sabbatical in Uganda, which presents a pretty massive logistical challenge in terms of getting my family there and arranging schooling and everything else. And just for a number of different factors, as I started to dig into the details, it felt like it wasn't actually going to accomplish what I thought I wanted or knew that I needed out of a sabbatical. And so I think it was kind of end of June, early July, when I had a really long conversation with my husband. We went out to breakfast and chatted with him and asked him. He's a great guy, and he's been incredibly supportive of my various ideas. I tend to have a lot of them. And I said, okay, so, you know, irrespective of what you think I want the answer to be, what do you think about this? He's like, yeah, I think it would be really stressful. I don't think it's a great option right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's also spent quite a bit of time living overseas. So I knew it was not coming from a place of like, I don't want to do this. He lived on a game reserve in Kenya for 6 months. So he's definitely done some pretty intense abroad experiences. But it was more coming from a place of all of these things that kind of made planning this Uganda option sabbatical feel at the time like a boulder. That he was kind of like, yeah, I think you're correct. And so it was a really hard decision to make because it felt like I was letting go of something that has been and continues to be quite important to me. But I felt a tremendous amount of relief and just like let go of a lot of structural stress of having to do two applications. But I really did feel a lot of relief once the decision had sort of passed to say, okay, this is actually a project I'm really excited about. There are some opportunities with staying local that are unique to that. It's definitely not, you know, an Instagram worthy sabbatical to some, maybe to walk my kids to and from school every day to have more flexibility. But I think, you know, if we think of the term sabbatical in terms of its origin and being about rest and being about a really unique opportunity in an academic career to kind of reset and think about and build something really special, then the decision feels very consistent with that, even as it represents not doing something that I would love to do were the circumstances different. And they just weren't, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I had talked to another faculty member at our institution who actually, if I remember the timing correctly, she had applied for sabbatical in 2020 and then basically in that following school year, you know, she ended up having a pandemic sabbatical.
Yeah.
And so this is very much not what she had wanted or planned, but it was really good. And that conversation was also really helpful to me. She kind of reframed, you know, I think a lot of times we think of ourselves as autonomous. And so it's like, well, in my autonomous world, this is of course what I do, but to say, you know, it's a privilege to be a parent and a spouse and a member of a community. And those things aren't barriers to doing what we want so much as they are really special and wonderful things that we can celebrate. And it's okay to kind of bend our life around those things and say, hey, this is what works in this particular, this phase, this season, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that because you'll probably have another sabbatical and you'll be in a different season then. And so really embracing the season you're in, as opposed to kind of trying to move that boulder all the time to make it happen, I think makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate that you talked about, you know, feeling a sense of relief or feeling, and also feeling like you could give up the Fulbright, because that was the question I was going to ask you, is like, what did it feel like to get this clarity? You know, so you literally got to get rid of a big task that you were working on when you decided not that anyone should glean any lessons like you should go abroad or you shouldn't, but for you, having that clarity about how to move forward really just, it let you get rid of something that wasn't going to serve you by moving two options forward.
Yeah. It's funny. I talk to my daughter about this in various ways all the time. She hates to make decisions because she doesn't like to take an option off of the table. Mm-hmm. And I've told her so many times, I totally understand that. I feel that way too. But also that's sort of the way that decisions function, right? We choose to do things, but then also by choosing to do those things, we take other options off the table. We do that all the time. I think certainly we want to be thoughtful about those decisions. It was really important to me that I didn't regret the decision. I didn't want to look backwards, you know, a year from now and say, wow, I can't believe I missed out on that really amazing opportunity. And so I wanted to feel like I had made the right decision. I definitely spent a lot of time thinking, talking to my husband, talking to others, asking folks for advice. But then accept that that's sort of inevitable. And it's not a bad thing, right? To take the option of going to Uganda or applying for a Fulbright off the table, it freed up parts of my summer to not have to do mm-hmm. two separate project proposals. I was definitely a much happier, less stressed, you know, family member who was able to participate in different ways. It's also freed up thinking about next year. There are some really unique opportunities that have presented themselves, or I'm sure will continue to present themselves, that we can do because we're here. Mm-hmm. I know, for example, I think we talked about this before, a previous conversation, one of my siblings lives in Morocco. And so by not going to Uganda, there are opportunities for us to visit them in their place. So there are opportunities. We're in the midst of planning some summer travel and thinking about what we want to do. And so yes, anytime you say, I'm going to do this and not this, you take an option off the table. But there are also a lot of good other things that come from that. And so I think anytime we make a decision, if we can do so thoughtfully, second piece is to give ourselves the grace to sort of accept that, you know, this is the decision I made with the best information I had at the time. And it really doesn't serve me or other people to constantly be looking back at that decision with new information potentially, mm-hmm. and then second guessing what I did. That's not to say we never undo things if we get it wrong, but I don't think I did in this case. I still feel really happy. And there have been a number of other Uganda opportunities. Ironically, as it was challenging to figure out the sabbatical, I've made a tremendous amount of progress on planning this new kind of every other January course that would run through our university. So it's just funny to me how I was working so hard to make this one thing work, and it was just hard. Mm-hmm. And then there are other things that would allow me to engage in a different way, not as long term, but have been comparatively quite smooth. And mm-hmm. I think it's important to pay attention to that too.
Yeah, for sure. And just how shifting your energy and your focus to something different, I think it can open up new opportunities. And I think it's also such an instructive lesson about how sometimes when we have an opportunity, we feel like it's the only opportunity we'll ever get. And what you're saying is absolutely not. Like, ironically, you closed off the Uganda for sabbatical option, and now you have all these other Uganda options that also maybe fit better for your family and your lifestyle where it is right now. You know, maybe someday when the kids are older, you'll have a sabbatical away, or maybe not, right? We need to stop thinking that that's kind of the ideal.
I remind my husband of this about once a year, and he kind of rolls his eyes at me now, but we got in a fight in graduate school, actually, in the parking lot of an IKEA. We didn't even make it in the store. We had already had our fight at an IKEA. He was, you know, he was training to be a veterinarian. I was in comparative education, and I basically had this existential crisis and was like, we're never going to live overseas again. What have we done? And so I made him promise that when we retire, we're going to sign up and do Peace Corps. So I reminded him every couple of years, like, you know. Peace Corps
volunteers. Yeah, I love it.
When we retire, we're going to be Peace Corps volunteers. He's like, I remember.
Well, part of what I loved in your decision-making process was that you were able to, even though you decided to ultimately take Uganda off the table for sabbatical, you were able to think about what was it about going to Uganda that excited you the most. And I actually think in the end, because you were talking about this, there was some friction with just getting things going in Uganda, but I think you were excited about the travel aspect, exposing your kids to a different culture. And so then when you decided not to go to Uganda, like you said, it opened up new possibilities for how can we do a version of that as a family? Like, how could we go on some longer extended trips as a family, going to visit your sister in Morocco? So there's also a way, I think, that when we might think of one ideal for sabbatical, we can kind of distill it down to its core components. What is the feeling or what are we trying to achieve by that? And maybe there are different multiple ways to achieve that that we haven't considered. And so it doesn't have to be moving the whole family and relocating. There are other ways to get that sense of adventure or whatever you wanted from Uganda at its heart.
Yes, that's right. I think sometimes we get into the mindset of assuming that there's really only one path to a particular outcome that we want. So if I want my kids to be well-traveled citizens of the globe who care about global issues, then the only way to conceivably do that is to have them live abroad for part of their childhood. This is, of course, ignoring the fact that I lived in the same small town in Ohio my entire childhood. So clearly there are other paths to this, but this was in my head, right? Mm-hmm. Well, clearly this is what we need to do. And I think that kind of binary thinking is just really unhelpful, and it can lead us to make decisions to sort of force things to work that might not otherwise work. And, you know, in a different set of circumstances, in a different place, as you said, this might work differently. But for this particular season, it wasn't working as well. So actually, this isn't because of that decision, but since that decision, we're taking our kids to Morocco for a little about a week and a half or so over the Thanksgiving break. And we just got their passports. They sent my daughter an extended passport. She has like 50 pages in this thing.
Okay.
I have no idea why. It was an accident.
She can go a lot of places.
Yeah, she's apparently going to be really busy. I just don't know. In 5 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, there are other ways to have them engage with the world. There are other ways to have them think more broadly. And also, I think sometimes, you know, if my goal is to have them become more concerned citizens, then what better way than investing in my local community and having them see that as well? Particularly living in the Twin Cities metro area, there are many opportunities to engage with global questions. We have a large Somali and Hmong population here. And so, yeah, I think when we get stuck on this thinking of, well, this must be the only path to the outcome that I want, we can miss signs that things aren't working well. We can get a little bit of tunnel vision. We can miss other cool opportunities. And I think this process of planning my sabbatical was definitely a good lesson in thinking more in terms of not what's the one outcome that I want, although maybe sometimes that's appropriate, but to think more in terms of what are the kinds of things I'm hoping for that are maybe a little bit more abstracted, mm-hmm. but help me think strategically and then evaluate options to say, you know, if my goal as a parent is, using this example, to raise globally concerned children, what are multiple ways of accomplishing that goal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know that you've only submitted your sabbatical application, and it's for, the plan is to take a full year sabbatical during the 25-26 school year, right? So I don't want to jinx it or assume that it's definitely going to get approved, but you're a pretty thorough person and you have great ideas. So I'm very hopeful for you. What are you looking forward to the most about your sabbatical? What kinds of things do you think are going to help you achieve that rest and rejuvenation that you're hoping for?
Yeah. It was a bit, most folks in our institution, my institution only take a semester. And so I definitely spent a long time thinking about how to justify a year so that the committee would view my application favorably. I think, first of all, you know, so for those who have young kids, you know that you're sort of beholden to your childcare spot and keeping that spot at all costs, especially if you like it. We really like our childcare. And so next summer, which would be kind of the informal beginning of my sabbatical, my son will be entering kindergarten, and so we can give up his spot and it won't matter.
Yes.
Yeah, it feels like freedom. And my daughter will be starting fifth grade. And so the plan right now is to take next summer completely off. I've found that when I give myself the gift of June, if I have just the summer off, that the rest of the summer is a lot more productive. And I just need time to kind of reset, to do nothing, to read a stack of books from the library. This past summer, my kids and I embarked on a journey. I'm sure we'll continue. Minneapolis, which we live really close to, has a whole bunch of free wading pools in their parks and many library branches. And so our goal is to try them all. And so
I love it.
We will probably continue that. We have a summer trip that we're kind of starting to plan that would take us to several national parks and to visit some family. So next, the goal would be for next summer to just be off, to give up that childcare spot that we've been hanging on to and just be off. And then my goal for the academic year is to really work in a kid's schedule. So my, you know, they start school around 9 and they're done around 3:45. And so I would essentially confine my working hours to only those hours, probably a little bit less if I'm often, but to, you know, three to four-ish days a week to use those school hours to get some work done. I have a long list of archives that I'm really excited to look at, to start looking at kind of periodicals and things that have shaped the evangelical imagination, to think about what conversations they're having about schooling. There's some writing I'm excited about doing that is written more directly for an evangelical audience and thinking about how we engage with schooling. I just had a piece published actually at the beginning of the month. I'm looking at kind of a Christian call to social justice in schooling that was published. Pursuing writing like that, that kind of brings together some different strands of my personal life with my research life. I'm not sure if we'll try to do something bigger trip-wise during the academic year. We haven't planned quite that far. And then my plan would be, I have a couple of archival trips as well that I'll probably try to fit in there. I haven't officially started booking some of those, but we'll get there. And then the following summer, I would again take completely off. And so the idea with that is that I have a solid year of, you know, however much time my kids are in school to get stuff done, which should be plenty of time to get what my true goal is, you know, to have this project be to really have a good body of data that I can then write off of. I found that I'm pretty good during the school year of polishing off writing, editing, copy editing, you know, proofing stuff. Getting some of those major big writing pieces off the ground can be more challenging just because I have limited time. So if I have a really good body of data, kind of have some sense of different articles that are going to come out of that, that would be amazing. And then and then the other piece will be this book proposal, crossing my fingers about that, as well as getting my sabbatical approved. My hope is that that would be kind of nearing completion, you know, draft completion and then revision. So I'd be sort of interweaving those two projects, which I actually really enjoy because the book project is collaborative. And so it's nice to have the accountability of someone else to get some stuff done. But then the other project is something that I've just truly been dying to have some time to work on. And so I don't doubt that I'll be excited to go down that. And once I start working on a project and have time to focus, I can be pretty good at staying on task. Yeah. But getting started can be hard. So it's sort of delightful to have all this time to just work on something.
Yeah, that's great. I love how you've created this, as you envision it, this balance between kind of the things that you and your family needs while also really carving out time to build a new direction in your research. I mean, it sounds like this is the perfect inflection point as you're wrapping up some other projects and you're able to build this project that really aligns with your own, your professional goals, with kind of where you are at your institution and in your career. And it gives you the time to really get it started. So that's, I'm so excited. Yay.
Yeah. No, it feels, assuming all goes well, I think the project I've proposed to do is not only a really interesting project that not a lot of folks have looked at in terms of research, but it's also one that more directly builds on conversations that are happening in communities that I'm a part of every day, mm-hmm. scholarly communities, other faith-based, you know, liberal arts schools and educational spaces. So it feels very exciting to think about that a little bit more deeply. And then also to think about how that thinking applies. One of the things I really love about the educational field is there is this sort of push to always say with research, well, what is the point? What are we going to do with this information? Yeah. And it's not to say that research that can't answer that question in an obvious way is invaluable, because sometimes we don't know yet what we don't know. And so exploratory research that just helps us understand the world better is also really valuable. But I think it has been really helpful as a discipline to me as a scholar to say, yeah, what's the actual value to this? And then how do I communicate that in a way that is helpful and meaningful to the audiences that I'm actually trying to impact with that work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I mean, it sounds like you're already working on that, but I remember you talking about using the sabbatical for, like, what are the other outlets, the not just peer-reviewed journals, but where you can really communicate with the people who the issues that you're studying affect.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Beth, I'm probably going to ask you to be on the podcast again at some point after your sabbatical so we can hear all about how it went. Before we sign off, what's one piece of advice that you would give someone who's in the early stages of planning the sabbatical?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, other than if you can swing it, signing up for your sabbatical series, it's been super helpful. I mean that sincerely. Go for walks if you need to have a really good think or if you need to have a really hard conversation. I mentioned earlier, my husband and I went out to breakfast to have this kind of deep conversation about whether or not Uganda was something we wanted to pursue as a family and me as a scholar. And we got home and the conversation was not done. It was really muggy outside. The Midwest can be really muggy in the summer. And I said, Can we finish this conversation on a walk? I think I'll go crazy if we have to sit down. And so we did. We walked like 2 miles. We had this conversation. And I think I do. Sometimes I'll be thinking just on a walk by myself and I'll realize that, oh my gosh, I've figured out that stupid conclusion paragraph that's been eluding me or whatever the thing is. And so I found walking either intentionally because I want to think about something or unintentionally just walking and then recognizing that my head is kind of in this different space. Or walking because I want to have a really challenging conversation and the movement's mm-hmm. helpful. Has been, you know, I realize that's not something that's open to anyone, but whatever the activity is for you that allows you to kind of free associate in your head and just sort of think abstractly and to kind of, I think there's something magical about moving our bodies and the way that that interacts with our brain. And this is totally out of my depth and research area, but I've found that really, really invaluable. And it's so easy to chain ourselves to the desk. And I'm guilty of this all the time and just think, well, if I just do this one more task, then suddenly clarity will come. And that it's not usually true, because usually by the time you finish the task, you have 5 more emails that present their own tasks. So setting aside time, getting away, going for a walk has been really, really helpful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I think part of what that does is sometimes when you start planning the sabbatical, there can be a tendency to focus on your sabbatical application, which is, you know, so, okay, I'm going to plan my sabbatical and sit down in front of my blank Word document and then make it happen. And I think your story helps us see that focusing on those details right away can actually be counterproductive to this level of abstraction that helps you
kind of take a step back and say, what do I actually want from this? And then what's the plan that helps me get there? I love that idea of walking, moving to try to get out of our, just out of our sort of scholarly bodies, right?
Yeah. And to remember that when the institution creates its application, whatever it looks like, its purpose with that application is to figure out the use of your sabbatical to the institution, which is fine. That's what they should do. But that doesn't mean that it will serve you particularly well in figuring out what kind of sabbatical will serve you, right? And that's a totally different question. And so I think, stepping away from the application in whatever way that looks like and thinking about what kind of sabbatical will serve me, and then going back to the application and putting that in language to explain how this sabbatical that serves you will serve the institution, I think is a much, it wasn't the way I started, but I'm glad that that's what I was able to do eventually, because I think that I came to a much better result through that.
Yeah, I love that. Starting with what serves you and then translating it. It's almost like translating it for the institution to let them know. And ultimately, I wish that institutions would know that if we come back rested and rejuvenated, we'll probably be better employees. But I don't think that's what most institutions are looking for on the sabbatical application. So,
yeah, you probably can't write that down. But if you could do that and write something else, that would be great.
Right, exactly. Well, Beth, I'm so excited for your sabbatical, and I hope everything goes well with your sabbatical application. You and I will be connecting again as you continue your planning. And like I said, I really hope to have you back on at the end of sabbatical so we can hear how it all went. Thank you so much. I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.